Welcome to Unit 5 of Culture of Healthcare. In this unit, we will discuss the topic of evidence-based medicine. What is evidence-based medicine, or EBM? I like to define it as a set of tools and a disciplined approach to informing clinical decision-making. So we apply the best evidence available to various clinical questions. We learn to seek out the best evidence and how to use it appropriately, though we cannot forget the caveat, which comes from a quote from Carl Sagan, obviously not applying to medicine, but being pertinent here, that absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. So we not only have to know what evidence is there, but what evidence is missing and how that might influence our decision making. So EBM allows clinical experience, or the art of medicine, to be integrated with the best science. It makes the medical literature more clinically applicable and relevant. What is the relationship of EBM to medical decision making? EBM focuses more on finding and applying evidence rather than going through the algorithms, if you will, of medical decision making that tend to be somewhat more focused on diagnosis than treatment. But the two of these are obviously interrelated. So what's the big deal about evidence-based medicine? Why are we not evidence-based in everything that we do? I point to some interesting writings from the popular press that talk about how humans arrive at decisions and how they apply evidence, not necessarily just to medicine, at least in the case of the first one, but in everything we do. So Keita has a book that describes 6 ways that humans come to false beliefs. One is that we tend to prefer stories over statistics, at least many people. The second is that we often seek to confirm and not to question our ideas. Another issue is that humans rarely appreciate the role of chance and coincidence in shaping events, although those hopefully exposed to EBM are a little better at that. Sometimes we misperceive what is going on in the world around us. Sometimes we oversimplify our thinking, and human memories are often inaccurate. We don't always remember things exactly as they occurred, especially over time. The article by Vreeman talks about many medical myths that persist, and there are myths in this article that will probably surprise you. Certainly they did to me when I first read it, but things like sugar causing hyperactivity, not wearing a hat in the outdoors causing excessive heat loss, and many other interesting myths that persist. There is a growing advocacy for medicine being more evidence-based. One of the 6 attributes of the high-quality 21st century healthcare system in the IOM Quality Chasm report was effectiveness, and they were referring to the use of evidence-based medicine principles and decision-making. There have been other reports in this series, one in particular talking about the learning healthcare system that learns from what we do, and naturally the main way to learn from what we do is to collect data and analyze it. You can't really do that outside of electronic information systems. And then this has given vision to this idea of having a better sense of what works in healthcare. Now, EBM has many methodologic details and challenges. We'll cover some of them in this unit. There are some more detailed descriptions of these challenges in a supplement to the journal Medical Care from 2007. This unit will explore the details of EBM. but it should be noted up front that there is some cultural pushback. Not everyone agrees with the complete experimentally oriented approach of EBM. There are other approaches for gaining knowledge, such as experience and observation. There are also some valid criticisms of EBM. EBM, in some sense, challenges physician-patient autonomy by having a very rigid view of what is evidence to be applied in decision-making for patient care. EBM tends to focus on large-scale randomized controlled trials that homogenize or take away individual differences. Finally, there are concerns about manipulations of clinical trials data and reports, which doesn't undermine the principles of EBM, but shows that in practice it has some shortcomings. Like many fields, EBM has to periodically refresh its terminology, introducing new terms to perhaps revitalize interest or get others interested in it or refine the definition. But in any case, one of the mantras of the EBM community now is comparative effectiveness research. And like health information technology, this achieved new, highly visible prominence through its funding in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, or ERA, also known as the stimulus bill. And completely aside from all the health IT funding, the stimulus bill also allocated $1.1 billion for comparative effectiveness research. It was also touted, like health IT, as a down payment on healthcare reform. The money was allocated as $0.4 billion for the Secretary of Health and Human Services, $0.4 billion to the National Institutes of Health, and $0.3 billion to the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. There was also a stipulation that two reports be prepared by June 30th, 2009, to inform the operational plan for comparative effectiveness research. These reports were indeed published by their deadline. One, the Federal Coordinating Council for comparative effectiveness research, and also a report from the Institute of Medicine prioritizing research topics, which I'll cover in the next slide. The Federal Coordinating Council was also tasked with developing a definition of comparative effectiveness research, and they came up with a draft definition that is on the recovery.gov website. It's quite long, so I'll just pull out a few pieces from it. So CER is defined as research comparing different interventions and strategies to prevent, diagnose, treat, and monitor health conditions. The key aspect of comparative effectiveness research is that it's comparative. It compares one approach versus another, or a group of approaches. The goal is to compare the approaches head-on against each other, rather than taking one study that compared something with a placebo and another study that compared something with a placebo and somehow trying to decide which is better. The goal is head-to-head research. Beyond just the research, CER must assess a comprehensive array of health-related outcomes for diverse patient populations, so it must apply to different patient populations, and we're not just talking about things like gender or ethnic diversity, although those are part of that, but also patients who have chronic conditions, patients who have multiple conditions that interact with each other. CER must address those. And finally, one last point relevant especially to informatics is that CER necessitates the development, expansion, and use of a variety of data sources and methods. So it's not just clinical trials, but it is things like mining databases of electronic health records, using appropriate caveats, and other sorts of things. So the Federal Coordinating Council report called for emphasis not only on the research that needed to be done, but also the other aspects around it. So human and scientific capital. So developing individuals with the expertise to do the research. Scientific methodology to carry it out. A data infrastructure to support it, which obviously includes things like registries, data warehouses, and other things derived from electronic health records and other electronic data sources. And then a mechanism to disseminate this research so we got into the hands of decision makers, patients, clinicians, policymakers, and so forth. The IOM report then prioritized 100 top research priorities, and these not only address the common diseases that require a lot of resources to treat, but also issues around healthcare delivery and health disparities. So what the research shows in terms of improving healthcare delivery and reducing disparities. In this unit, then, we will cover these topics. We'll begin in the next segment with definitions and applications of EBM. We'll then look at the major questions, clinical question types that EBM tries to answer, questions about intervention, about diagnosis, about harm and prognosis. We will look at techniques for summarizing evidence, things like systematic reviews and meta-analyses that bring multiple studies together to give us a more comprehensive picture. We will then look at some approaches to putting evidence into practice, in particular looking at clinical guidelines and decision analysis, and we'll close our discussion with a discussion of some of the limitations of EBM.